Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, an independent RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. Joining me, as always, in person, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, Kat. If I lean over anymore, I'm going to fall off this bed. Yes, I'm on a bed. Make your own images in your head. I don't care.
Also joining me, also in person, the Blood God crew unites at last. It's Eric Van Allen.
I'm just waiting for Nadia to fall off this bed. It's going to be hilarious. It's going to be great.
Gonna be like clatter.
All right, but there's your free pit for the week.
Yes, we are. Wow, live and in person pit. I'm very excited.
Oh, God.
Yes, we are here at PAX East 2023, about 2 hours before we do our panel, in which we are doing the ultimate RPG draft. It's going to be a lot of fun. Still a little hungover from karaoke last night, but we'll be talking about that in a bit, I suppose. Because we're here and hanging out with each other, we're going to just do a mailbag, vibe a little bit, have a good time, and chat. But before we get to that, if you enjoy the show, please leave us a review on the podcatcher of your choice. You can find me on Twitter at @_catbot, Nadia is @NadiaOxford, and Eric is @CMoosi, CAMOOSI. If you want to support the podcast, please go to Patreon at patreon.com/bloodgodpod, where for just $1 a month, you get access to our Discord, and also you get our podcasts ad-free. And there's tons of bonus content as well. Hey, a Pantheon vote is just around the corner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we are doing Super Mario RPG this month. So that should be a banger of an episode. Okay, let's get started. We'll start by talking about what we've been playing, our sacrifices to the Blood God. And I don't know, we've been traveling a lot, going all over the place. I was just at GDC.
Yeah, no kidding.
We're here at PAX East now. So I'll start with you, Eric, because you got to play something at PAX East that I also saw, and it looks pretty good.
Yeah. I played a few things I really liked this weekend, but one that I literally just came from and really, really enjoyed was Mage Seeker, which is a game by the former Moonlighter team that's a Riot Forge game. So it's the League of Legends spinoffs that they've been doing, like Rune King. And I forgot what the Hextech Mayhem, I think, was the name of it. This is Riot basically licensing out their League of Legends IP to small indie studios to make neat things. And this Mage Seeker one focuses on Sylas, who is a character from League of Legends that literally has chains wrapped around his arm, not totally unlike Kratos.
Symbolism.
Yeah, and he his whole setup is that he is formerly a Mage Seeker who, in the Kingdom of Demacia, mages are imprisoned, mages are looked down upon, and he was basically a snitch, kind of a narc. He would he could sense magic, and so they would use him to hunt mages, but then he found out that he could channel the magic himself, and so he got thrown away, and now he's leading a revolution of the mages. And the whole idea is that you are both kind of this warrior who can throw your chains and leap across the battlefield and punch people in this like top down action combat that looks, I mean, it's very similar to Moonlighter or like other kind of top down pixel action games you might have played, like Hyper Light Drifter, that sort of thing. But you also have this ability to throw your chains and literally tear the magic out of people like copy it.
Ow.
And it's a really, 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 really cool game. I've been thinking about it a lot in the short time coming from the demo to here. It's really cool how they've managed to mix fast, action combat where you're making like split second decisions and jumping between enemies while also paying attention to the environment, being like, okay, this guy is a fire mage and this is an ice mage. So I'm going to steal the fire ability and throw a fireball at the ice mage to do extra damage. And then while the fireball is going, I'm going to throw out my other chain and grab the ice ability and throw the ice ability at the other guy to capitalize on elemental weaknesses. And it just works. It flows. It's quick. It's snappy. But it never feels overwhelming, which really impressed me. And
it's really pretty.
Yeah.
And I am not a League of Legends person. Mm-hmm. I know virtually nothing about the characters or anything like that. But I feel like that's not necessarily a barrier to entry because the characters are appealing by mm-hmm. themselves. And the graphics are really nice too. The art style, it reminds mm-hmm. me a little bit of like Hyper Light Drifter and that kind of thing. It has that kind of look. So
it's a really cool mix of like pixel art and then some 2D arts, some like very hand-drawn frame by frame stuff that looks really gorgeous in motion. To your point about the League of Legends stuff, I think they picked ultimately the right story to tell with this because Silas was after my time with League of Legends, and I'm not like a huge fan of his design overall. I think he's an interesting character, but I'm not like crazy about him. But in the context of Mage Seeker, he's really cool. And not only that, because it's set in Demacia, you kind of have some of the standard bearers of League there. So you have Garen and Lux, who are very recognizable for League of Legends players. There was a tease of Morgana in the demo that I played. Morgana's a longtime League of Legends character. I feel like they were teasing Volibear. I'm not sure if they were teasing Volibear, but he's a big armored polar bear who has lightning and he rules.
Oh, sweet.
So I was telling you this on the way over here, Kat, but I think the most amazing thing about all this stuff that Riot's been doing is that it's taking League of Legends, which as we saw through Arcane and all these other things, has really good, interesting characters, and they're putting them in contexts that will make people who don't play League of Legends still get the gist.
That's
and
smart.
Get into it. Yeah, I think the popularity of characters like Jinx and Vi speaks to that. Like Arcane basically put those characters into a higher tier of public consciousness. And I don't know that like Silas is going to suddenly become like the next big League of Legends character because of this, but it's really cool to see these characters remixed and recontextualized because it's fun when this happens. Mm-hmm. I don't know why more companies don't do this. Nintendo, I'm talking to you. You made Cadence of Hyrule.
Oh, and it was so good.
So good.
Oh, I love it.
And then there just hasn't been another one of those since. And I would love to see more companies get a little bit more free with this kind of stuff.
Riot has done a really good job of taking all these characters and kind of a vibe and a culture that it's created over the past decade or so. As far as I'm concerned, they've kind of taken Blizzard's place with the culture and everything. Yes, I know like Riot as a company has been problematic in the past, so I do want to put in that caveat. But by and large, like I think it has a really rich universe, I suppose, that has worked really well with shows like Arcane and the RPG by the Battle Chasers folks, Ruined King, and now Mage Seeker. There's a lot of different directions that they can go, and I've been pretty interested in it. Eric, did you have anything else that you got to see or play that was stood out to you?
Yeah, I want to shout out Born of Bread. I want to make sure I'm
Born of Bread.
Yeah.
That's cute.
It's a game I played today because I just saw online, like I'd gotten the email, I looked at it, and they were like, oh, it's this cute little Paper Mario-inspired RPG. And I was like, okay, you know, I'll go over there. You know, RPGs are ostensibly our thing. And even though we end up talking about action games a lot lately. And I went and played it, and it is so dang charming. It is really, really good. It nails that Paper Mario feel of you are this Papa Baker is in town making bread for the queen, and the queen wants a special bread from the grimoire. And So he makes the loaf and it comes out and it's a real boy.
Oh, God.
And you get called Loaf. You're Loaf.
Oh, like a cat.
Boy. Yeah. And so he puts clothes on you and then things transpire and you end up on this magical journey trying to figure out how Loaf has come to life and what's going on. It's just so charming and so funny. Like the Papa Baker has this great line where he's like, I've always been Papa Baker, but now I'm a dad. And he's like crying and stuff. It's very good. The music is just that like perfect, you know, bop that you'd want. And that sort of like fast Paper Mario style thing. And it is a Paper Mario style battle where you have these QTEs that you're doing to do attacks. And they're all very inventive and fun and whimsical. All the characters are just really, they pop in the way that like a good Mario RPG character pops. And shout outs to everyone in the Discord who always says, oh, I want shorter RPGs. They said that they're aiming for like a short runtime of this RPG. So it looks like just a charming, cute little game. I believe they said this summer on PC is what they're aiming for. And then consoles are in the works, TBD.
Mm-hmm.
But that was one of those ones where you go to an appointment at PAX and you're like, oh, it's just this little indie. We'll see. And you walk away like, that was amazing.
Oh,
that
was so good. Yeah, those are the best games.
Yeah, yeah. I really can't emphasize enough that listeners of this podcast will probably want to keep an eye on Born of Bread.
Born of Bread.
I'm not going to forget that name, that's for sure.
It's a memorable name. I was at GDC the past week. I was going to various panels. I went to two CD Projekt panels.
Oh, actually. Sweet.
One of them was about level design, and I thought it was really interesting because they talked about how they had originally created as an immersive sim kind of situation, which is like the biggest difference from Witcher 3. And they said that they were troubled by the fact that people felt like play styles didn't matter. And so they went in to take a hard look at why exactly it was like that. And they talked some about Dishonored and such, and like, why do games with fewer options feel more robust? And the conclusion that they came to was that, first of all, they were creating these paths that were built around playstyles, but they also made a generic path because they wanted people who didn't do a good job of optimizing their character or something to find it. And players did. And they took it because the generic path usually had like the bespoke aspect to it that they created, that kind of thing. They also said that often the individual paths were too close together, which created this feeling of them not really mattering. And then at the end, you would often come into a bottleneck where they would just pile a lot of stuff. And so he went through the map and talked about like, okay, but like we need to spread out the entrances and you need to be on a certain path and we need to reward stuff like stealth gameplay by like being able to stealth past a particularly strong enemy and that kind of thing. And it was interesting. It was an interesting tweak that made me think that maybe Cyberpunk isn't as much of a lost cause from a gameplay standpoint. You're rolling your eyes, Eric.
Look,
I love that we're together because I can watch him like react in real time.
Having just played that game for a full year on Normandy, I don't disagree that like there are ideas there. There are clearly moments where that game wants to be an immersive sim. It wants to be Deus Ex. That is such a fundamental thing that you have to nail and cannot just be patched or updated, that they would have to get right pretty early on. And sure, maybe they do some stuff in Phantom Liberty that looks really cool and addresses some of that, but a lot of those levels I found, for every level that had interesting branching paths, and I can think of a few, and I was thinking of a few as you were talking, there were a lot of others that were just, here's a thing, go do thing. And that is Cyberpunk to me.
I think it could definitely benefit from better level design, for sure. Because they wanted a really complex problem-solving aspect with the net running and everything. And it never quite came together. Maybe some of it was that they were just under a giant time crunch and they were trying to produce so much content. And maybe it ultimately suffered, but
that game's huge. It's massive. And I keep trying to think of how you fit really bespoke, like intricate levels inside a world that you also want to just be able to drive around and do GTA stuff in. GTA, like, I don't think of level design when I think of that. So as nice as I like Los Santos, so, I don't know.
I also went to a talk about the narrative design lessons. There was like, here are 10 things that we do when we are designing our narratives in The Witcher and Cyberpunk. And it was fairly interesting. They were talking about how they love to introduce a quest line or something with a knowledge gap, for example, where they're like, put everything in front of you and then make you go, okay, but what the heck just happened here? And Blood and Wine was like an example that they gave, for example. They also talked about how they work really hard to make the characters a lot more than just plot deliverers. And they said they try to integrate little moments. For example, like having Pan Am just like stretch her like legs across you and that kind of thing.
I do. Those worked. Those were good. When I think of the good character stuff and narrative stuff in Cyberpunk, it's all in the side quests. Like Claire, the driver slash bartender that you work with, her stuff is fantastic. It's really, really good. And there was even one that like really got to me somehow that was about this weird dark web secret that you chased all around town. And I thought the ending to it was surprisingly profound in a way that I was like, I never even knew it existed the first time I played it. And I think that's kind of the problem is that you have really good stuff and the Pan Am stuff is on the main, is it on the main plot line? I don't think you have to do it to get completion, but I think most people who play that game played that mission. But it's also a case of how do you get your players to that stuff if that's where the goodies are, you know? How do you get them there? And that's, I'd be curious to talk to them about that.
I asked them about working with Keanu and like their lessons from that. And they were like, yeah, we kind of, the thing that was challenging is when you're making a character in a game, you can write them however you want, but with you're working with Keanu, you're working with an actual actor. And at a certain point you go, I need to write for an actor. And it's a different kind of muscle. And they said they thought they were getting better as time went on. I think Eurogamer had a story about how they intentionally wrote Keanu as a jerk. In Cyberpunk because people, he's so likable that people would naturally just always want to side with him.
Well, Johnny Silverhand's a dick. To be clear, that dude sucks. I actually think Keanu did a great job in Cyberpunk.
I don't know. It's that hot of a take.
I've heard up and down. We can get Katie McCarthy on here. We can talk about it.
I think Keanu actually, his performance isn't great in this, but
he's Keanu. Keanu's Keanu.
He's got, I mean, I think a lot of people think of the delivery, they're like, wake the F up, samurai, and stuff like that. He's got some really good stuff in the later part of that game, especially if you go down his own quest line and some of the carry stuff as well, that gets really, really good. So
you know, you gotta thank that depiction of Keanu Reeves for that, one of the best memes ever. Like, I ain't reading all that, but I'm happy for you. Or sad, like, and it only works because of Johnny Silverhand and the icon.
I thought you were going to talk about the one that's just the trailer from Cyberpunk, but it keeps cutting him off at times.
That's so great.
This is what we lost when E3 went away.
Oh my god, the year that they revealed, like, just like stuff like that. And I was thinking also of the Death Stranding reveal. Man, that was one of my favorite E3 moments. Everyone was like, what the F did we just look at? Everyone's collectively just lost their mind.
Or like, here's Yu Suzuki coming out to announce Shenmue 3 on the PlayStation stage. That's what I always think of. It's like, Shenmue, it's alive. It's really fun to think about that now in retrospect.
Yeah.
2015 when they announced FF7 Remake and Shenmue 3. And what was the other one?
Last Guardian.
That was the Last Guardian one.
Yeah, that was a crazy year, but...
The Last of Us Part 2 reveal at PlayStation Experience, I think
I think Kat was at that. He nearly fainted because he was so hot, as I remember.
That was E3 2018.
Oh, okay.
The last PlayStation E3.
Yeah.
The Last of Us, PlayStation.
Where they shepherded you through, like, four different experiences.
Yes, and it was cool, except for the part where I was standing in a barn, and I had just had something to drink, and I was packed shoulder to shoulder, and I was like, I need to sit down, or I will faint.
Yeah, I'll barf. Here's some banjo.
And that's how I made news.
idiot game journalist faints in the middle of Last of Us 2 reveal.
I did interview the Cyberpunk folks. We'll have a story going up on IGN this coming week. But they said, I asked them about the phones. And they were like, yeah, it didn't work. And like we tried to integrate a lot of workarounds and such, and the ability to silence them. But we were going for something that was fairly real. And what we learned was that we needed something more bespoke, I think.
Yeah, I think that like post-patch update that they did that let you text with some of the companions and stuff was maybe one of the best things they added to that game besides just making it function. Mm-hmm. Was it added so much to, after I had romanced Judy in my playthrough for Normandy FM, she was texting me about like, you know, family troubles. She like drunk texted, like booty call texted my D at one point, which is very funny. And I was like, this is so much good personality and character that, you know, having this ambiently in the world is so good that I would really want them to kind of chase that further and maybe have some of those characters interact. I would love to see like Judy and Pan Am interacting. Mm. Like that's the dream when you have that sort of like BioWare large party situation.
But their lead quest designer is moving to Boston, and he's working on the Cyberpunk sequel.
Yeah.
I believe it's Polaris. And he has to hire, he said he had to hire a whole narrative team, like from scratch, basically, because they're making that over in the Boston studio. And then they're making the new Witcher in Europe. And so they were kind of sketching out. They're like four major studios now for CD Projekt. It's pretty remarkable how much they've been growing. But it sounds like there's a lot of work to do yet on the next Cyberpunk.
I actually found the, when I went to E3 2006 and I told you I saw the first Witcher game, when nobody knew what the hell it was. Yeah. I got like, that was back before they gave out digital assets. They were still giving out analog. I have the Trapper Keeper for the Witcher. It's actually great.
Probably worth some money now.
It might be. It's full of like media stuff and everything. It's like, that was a really interesting, really cool thing. I think that I understand why it's gone now, but I miss it a lot. All that stupid swag.
You know, you turn to this page of the Trapper Keeper, and this is where your Witcher sex cards are. That you can have printed out.
Beyond that, in terms of GDC, I went to the Kirby panel, which Kirby. Unfortunately
oh my
started
gosh,
late.
That looked so wonderful.
That looked like
it was
fun.
Very fun. A lot of art, like silly art. They were like, here's why it's hard to do Kirby in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Secret, he's round, so mm-hmm. like, so which way is he pointing? It's annoying to shoot the star out of his mouth, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So I had a good time at that, and I went to the awards, and surprise, surprise, Elden Ring won everything.
Yeah, yeah. I was more interested to see who won at the IGFs, because I thought there was a really like good, like solid nominee list for indies this year. And I was happy to see some folks taking home hardware.
I went to the Limited Run party and saw Jeremy Parrish and bullied my way onto the Insert Credit podcast. So,
oh, he's at GDC, is he? Like he went overseas?
Right? Yeah. But Jeremy Parrish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I mean, he flew over.
Norder's not here.
North Carolina.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So, I also want to talk very briefly about Diablo 4, which honestly, we could probably hang an entire episode around that, but the timing's been a little bit bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's been quite interesting to watch the reactions to it. I know over at IGN, there's a lot of excitement about it. I was really taken aback by kind of people were saying Game of the Year potential. I'm like, really?
Dang.
Wow, okay. That's some hype.
Kat, are you bringing this up just so you can dunk on Nadia again?
No, I'm not bringing it up because of that, but I'm bringing it up because A, it's an RPG, and B, because I mean, we've had two weekends now.
Mm-hmm.
We had the weird KFC weekend.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You look like you have PTSD right now or something.
Look, it's been a long weekend.
That's fair. We were up until 2 a.m. last night doing karaoke. Shout out to Ken Shepard, who is like the karaoke king.
Karaoke dad is what we're all
karaoke
called.
Karaoke dad.
Karaoke dad. Diablo 4 seems really interesting. It's been interesting to watch the conversation around it too, because obviously all of the Activision Blizzard stuff, all of the, you know, God, it feels weird to say controversies, but like you have to pile on the lawsuit and the buyout and then the reports and everything that has come out of Activision Blizzard. And then
there was definitely discourse because somebody was dunking on Gene Park and Jason Schreier and saying, oh, I guess as soon as they put out a good game, you're just going to forget about all that. And Schreier was like, look, boycotting this game is not supporting the developers.
Yeah. And the developers have openly said, like, or some developers at least have openly said, like, we don't want you to necessarily boycott the game. I think this is going to once again be a case of, you are your own moral compass. You make decisions about what affects you, especially what affects you, like the people around you. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you make your own choices and you make do with that. I know I'm probably going to play Diablo 4. I'm curious about it. I'm really bummed because the beta last weekend only had, I think it was Berserker or Warrior, Spinny Boy. Spinny Boy, Magic Person, and Druid, I think,
They had Necromancer.
Necromancer's this weekend, so that's why I'm bummed, is because I like Necromancer.
You're a Necromancer guy.
I love to be a guy that summons a lot of little guys, you know? I like to have my little band of freaks that come out of the ground.
I like playing as a ranger. Or a monk or something like that.
Okay.
Anything with summonables. Like, I want a lot of pets.
Yeah, why are you playing Necromancer then? That's Necromancer.
No, I was playing Druid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Animals are better than dead people.
Pet. Yeah. I'm the pet.
I am the pet now.
Look at me. I'm a werewolf now. I mean, a lot of interesting little tweaks. I'm still not sure about the MMO light aspect of it, with like the world bosses on spawn timers and that kind of thing. I like the dodge roll aspect to it. I think the game itself looks fantastic. I was surprised by the level of excitement around it. I think is the main thing that I wanted to raise, which is, I thought, well, okay, like this is one of several like releases that will probably do well. Now it's like, oh, this is like one of the biggest games of the year, period.
Yeah. Definitely on our end over at, you know, in the editorial world, it was a sudden moment of Diablo 4 was kind of on our radar and then became very on
It's
our
extremely
radar.
On the radar for sure.
Yeah. And I think, I want to say Zach Zvizan or someone over at Kotaku said something to this effect, but like, many people have tried to do Diablo, but no one's really done Diablo the way Diablo does Diablo. I like Torchlight. I like, you know, Path of Exile. I would probably theoretically like if I ever tried it. I think that's probably the closest to a Diablo clone that has ever existed. But Blizzard, after many, many years and lots of development, has really figured out Diablo, and they can get Diablo down.
Well, they got a really good team on there. Mm-hmm. I mean, like Rob Ferguson is working on it. A lot of really veteran team, and Blizzard, because of all of its problems, has been severely impacted by brain drain, talent drain in recent years. But, and then of course, for years, they just didn't put anything out.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, Overwatch 2, I think, is the key example of a game that was impacted by a lot of talent drain and then just like no clear vision about where they wanted to go. Like, the original plan was quite flawed, I think, with Overwatch 2.
Here's the thing.
They had an idea of what they wanted to do, and it kept changing. And it kind of became a cobbled-together thing.
I feel like the plan for Overwatch is not that dissimilar from the plan that it seems like they're shifting to for Call of Duty, where you have the free-to-play part that is multiplayer, and everybody plays it, and there's cosmetics you can buy, and really, like, that's where the cash is. And then you have a separate part. It's like, hey, do you want to pay us some money to get a campaign and things that will carry over into the free-to-play multiplayer? Hey, you can do that. But I think where that works really well for COD, that maybe doesn't work well for Overwatch, mostly because Overwatch like has not really shown us what that single player looks like. The single player that they've shown us has not been... I don't like any of the PvE events in Overwatch. They're not good.
No.
So, cautious on that, but who knows, maybe Overwatch will come back and just do what Battleborn did, you know, all those years ago, ironically.
Oh my,
the irony. But in terms of Diablo, they put so much into it.
Oh yeah.
I think. They were like, we need to get this right.
We need a win real bad.
We need a win so badly.
Big one.
Yeah, and I was a little... I wondered a little bit about the MMO light kind of aspects to it. But so far, okay, I like Diablo 3 a lot better than a lot of people
did, actually.
Yeah. I had a great time playing through it with multiple classes, and especially once they kind of reset it and did the expansion and had an actual honest to God end game.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot better, I think. But having played the Diablo 2 remaster, I can understand why people were really put off by Diablo 3's art style, because it went so wow. And mm-hmm. I think the return to that kind of look and feel with Diablo 4 is really good. And I think they've made a lot of really smart changes, like how you deal with the passives and everything. They've made the loot a lot more streamlined and a lot less annoying. They retained a lot the mechanical depth and everything, but there's also more of an action aspect to it with the dodge rolls and such. So, I mean, at a minimum, I think it's going to be a good game. So,
yeah, it's becoming more and more of a crowded year, isn't it?
It sure
just
is.
Just a bit. Yeah.
I would like to play Final Fantasy 16.
Yeah,
around
you confessed
that time
this to me earlier. Yeah,
I feel bad for Final Fantasy 16 because it's going to get dwarfed by Diablo 4.
Is it coming out at the same time? I don't remember.
Same time. Yeah,
within the same window.
Is it really the same like audience though? Would you say like I don't know?
Well, there are two AAA games competing against one another.
Right.
Yeah, I think the thing is not necessarily that they're the same audience, but they're both games that want to pull in at least like a good amount of the kind of general gaming consciousness, if that makes sense. They're both games that can't, but don't just rely on their fan base. They also want to like bring in people who are like, oh, Final Fantasy, I might try that.
You've worked for a website, Nadia.
No, I haven't.
You know,
you can't prove that.
You know how there's only so many resources to go around.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Influencers and such have to decide what they're going to cover. And I think that gaming consciousness or gaming or the oxygen around it, I think Diablo 4 is going to suck a lot of the oxygen out of the room.
I'm going to go for 16 because it has the puppy. It has the direwolf puppies in it.
I mean, I would have been pretty shocked if you had picked Diablo 4 over Final Fantasy.
I mean, like you said, I like Diablo 3, but I'm not like, holy shit, Diablo. I'm more like, you know, oh, I'm going to play Final Fantasy.
I'm not like, holy shit, Diablo either, but, you know.
I think you've got the right idea that Diablo 4 is going to eat up a lot of public mindshare because it's not just a game that you play, but you play it with your friends.
Right.
And you can watch other people play it.
Everybody will be talking about it on Twitter, social media, that kind
of
thing.
Look at my build, that sort of thing. Whereas like 16 is going to be a very like, you're in a room by yourself playing this game, you know?
That's what Final Fantasy is all about.
The best case scenario for 16 is that it's so good that people are like, wow, you have to play 16.
You get by on word of mouth.
That at the end of the year, it ends up getting a bunch of awards. And then people go, this is literally the best Final Fantasy in years.
I'm just interested to say, if it was like by a regular Final Fantasy team, I'd say, sure, whatever, good luck. But given that it's by like Soken and Yoshi-P and Koji Fox, that's a big deal. That's Final Fantasy 14 is still very inaccessible for a lot of people, but we never shut up about it for a reason. And 16 is just, as you say, the opportunity for regular schmoes to say, hey, what's this Final Fantasy all about? And hey, what's this? This is the team that gave us 14. What can they give us as a single player?
I'm not trying to dunk on 16. To be clear, I'm just saying the takeaway is that Diablo 4 is going to be bigger even than I thought.
To Nadia's point, if Final Fantasy was a game of blackjack, Square Enix put a lot of chips down on 14. They doubled down and they got a lot of chips back, and now they're taking all that goodwill and putting it onto 16 and being like, come on.
Yeah. Put it all on black.
Let it ride.
Square Enix doubled down on Final Fantasy 16 and Blizzard just went, we're just embracing the double down.
We're just gonna Oh god, the double down.
My heart hurts. All right. Nadia, what have you been playing?
Well, you guys all had all this, like, you know, Milhouse with the horsey, nay, nay. That's how I feel right now, because you guys are all like, oh, I played this, and I saw this. I've just been playing Octopath and just loving it.
Nothing wrong with that.
Hell yeah.
Because I'm like...
Have you played it yet, Kat?
Started it.
You don't get a fist bump for starting.
Actually, I'm taking that back.
You know what? Actually, when I was flying over to Boston, I pulled out my old Switch and I played a little Fire Emblem Engage. I finally got through quite a tough level. Mm-hmm. But what I started playing Theater Rhythm.
Oh, Theater Rhythm is so good.
And I'll just very briefly say, it took a minute to get used to the buttons thing. And actually, I'm struggling a lot with the field. I don't understand, like, I keep failing on the field. Because I'm used to doing it with the stylus, and now I'm
It's
like,
just, you know what, it's push. Don't feel like you're obligated to push at a certain, like, you know, pressure. Just push up as far as you can go, push down. Like, I don't know, I really got the feel of the waves, so...
And crank that wheel. Spin it.
They just released The World Ends With You music from it. So I was like, heck yeah. I was playing that.
Your music's coming to it too, right?
Yeah. What a collection. Oh my gosh.
It's only going to cost you like $100.
I paid for it all. I'm such a schmuck. I don't care. It's actually a really good exercise song if you're like cycling. That's what I cycle along to. Sweat my ass off after a while.
There's a cute little opening. To, I think, the main Final Fantasy theme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And seeing all the mascots and characters and everything, and the characters from over the years flying together, I'm like, this is the Final Fantasy I want.
It's pretty cute.
Kind of the cute looking one. A lot of character, a lot of personality. And then I was kind of sitting in the hotel lobby here at the West End and looking at a Final Fantasy 16 trailer playing on loop. And I was like, ooh, Grimdark. Maybe the dark fantasy, maybe a little less so. I kind of want the cutesier, but I understand why they went in that direction. Anyway, that was my takeaway. So you're playing Octopath?
Yeah, it's pretty much like right now it's my game of the year. It's freaking crazy how good this game is. Yeah, I'm like in the midst of all the stories. Like, I just did Casty's second chapter.
Casty's the best.
And I just love the fact there's so many random stupid things you can do, like Particio's the commerce quest, where it's like, hey, you want a ship?
You want to buy a boat?
You want to buy a boat? Okay, it costs a hell of a lot of money. Well, I'm going to work towards that because there are so many ways to make money in this game with Particio. He has so many talents and stuff. So I did that. And then you have like this really funny quest where you find musicians for this guy who's like, I have this thing that chords music. What can I do with it?
Oh, that was such a fun, interesting little quest.
Yeah, and and what happens is you add a sound test to the game when you do that. And you can play these games on, these sounds on like a gramophone in the pub. And now you can collect songs. And you have like, I can't remember what the last one was, but it was some sort of librarian thing with the merchant with the what is my most valuable thing. That is great because he's like, what's my most valuable treasure? Oh, obviously his daughter. You bring his daughter to him. He's like, no, not it. And I'm like, oh my God. That's terrible. And so, yeah, it's just has so many like, I don't know. The storytelling is so good. Like, I want to rush to Thorne's last chapter, but I'm just kind of like holding back.
Oh,
Thorne. Yeah.
Thorne's last chapter is a trip and a half, let me tell you. So I have rolled credits on Octopath Traveler 2.
You rolled credits on Octopath?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm going to roll credits.
Have you rolled credits on Xenoblade yet?
I did it once. I'll do it again. And yeah, you can read my review of Destructoid, but I love that game. I sincerely love that game. It is really cool, really unique. The ending of that game, by the way, is absolutely bonkers.
Really?
Like all the post-game stuff after you finish all the paths, I was like, how are they going to tie this together? Is this just going to be like, oh, we all team up to fight the evil? And like, kind of yes, but the way in which they get there is jaw on the floor amazing.
Yeah,
like,
I'm looking forward to that.
Top 10 anime betrayals kind of shit. Like, real good.
I love Ochette, like the little monster girl. Like, she's
Ochette's
adorable.
So good. Ochette can get busted.
Is busted beyond belief. Here's an example of what the game does. Okay, so I got the ship. You can get the ship as early as you want, as long as you get the leaves. And then I went to an island where there's these crazy-ass enemies I had no business fighting, but I saw this huge one. I said, I'm going to take this asshole down. I captured it. It's like Ancient Rat King 6.
Yes, he's so good.
He's busted. He comes out with like a spear attack, hits everything, and buffs you at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely nuts. And I found this reward. I found it because I went out of my way to look for this island and say, hey, I'm going to try this. I have no business trying it, but I can do it if I know how to break an enemy. And there are so many ways to break enemies. It's really, really just so many interesting paths. I mean, it lives up to its name. And actually, I really like the character interactions this time around. They did a much better job. Like, you probably saw the one I posted on Twitter where Cassie talk about how she has amnesia, and Particio's like, oh, yes, boy, howdy. Yes. I don't know what that would be like.
Oh, my God.
And she's like, well, you know, last night you and I, like, you downed 3 glasses of wine and you were doing this, this, and this. I'm like, oh, Mr. Wild's talent, that was enough for you. You did this, this, and this. And Particio's like, God darn, I don't remember any of that. I'm dying to know how that happened. Well, now I know what it's like to have amnesia. And she's like this little sweet nursed character who you think is so innocent. It's like, oh, shit.
It was so good. Cassie's just like, well, you don't remember that after 3 glasses of wine, you and I went for a little romp in the hay. And he's like, oh, darn it, I did that. And she's like, no, but that's what it's like to have amnesia. And it's such like a good, it's what Tales does so well, is they take these characters, and even though they're not animating them, it's just portraits or whatever, they put so much character into the writing that it just comes across. You really believe that these characters are getting to know each other, are growing together. And it really brings it together in a way that I think there are so many like big things and tiny little things that they do to recognize your journey in this game, especially at the end, that I almost got a little emotional at the end. It was really something.
Can you give me some tips as somebody who is just starting out in the Octopath, because it feels almost a little overwhelming in some ways. I mean, first of all, you have to pick the initial characters. You're like, right. Who do I want to pick? The druid, or not the druid. Sorry, the monster, the ranger.
Ochette. She's great.
Yes, I got the owl.
Perfect.
And I'm like starting and such. So, yeah.
I think Ochette is a good character to start with. And here's why. Because when you kill animals, that sounds terrible. When you kill them, there's a 25% chance you will capture one. Yeah. And you can say to yourself, oh, should I capture this? Could you get like information about what they're good at? Say like a monster hits twice for sword damage, for example. That's something you would want. That's even really if it's good. Even if it's not powerful, it's good for breaking an enemy. So there's really not a lot of wrong choices you can make in this game. Like, it's you play it by ear and you come out pretty good no matter what happens. And you have fun because you're like pushed to explore more, like I did with the island. I said, what can I find here? Oh, crap. Now I'm the king of the world.
Yeah, I'd say that's a big one. And also just the rule for Octopath I found is do chapter ones all around. I like to recruit the whole party. And then kind of do chapter twos. And once you open up chapter two, this game gets a little bit trickier with how it routes stuff out and pieces together levels. Because like Ochette's like chapter two is 3 different chapters and they're all varying levels. So you don't want to go and do her chapter twos right away. But you can go do other people's chapter twos and kind of like move party members in and out. I think they encourage you to move those party members in and out too with the latent powers, which is really smart.
You mentioned Ochette's a good starting point. Yes. Any characters I should be getting into my party like soon, like relatively quickly?
The trick is, fun fact, they did this in the first game too, is that all the characters' names spell Octopath.
Oh, for Christ's sake, I didn't even notice.
Letter. Yeah. And the way they have structured this game is that there's like 4 characters on the West continent, 3 on the East, and then Ochette down at the bottom in the South. And if you go all 4 on the East or all 4 on the West, you'll basically cover most of the weaknesses and also have like a support character, a magic character, a physical character. So I would say like definitely head to the East and pick up Throne, Tamanos, Oswald. And those are all like really good starting characters to get to like pair with Ochette. But you could also just go to the West and be like, I want to get Particio, Agnia. I do think Oswald is like very important to get. Especially
the Lucky Rabbit.
Yeah,
he's not very lucky.
I also just don't think you can go wrong. This game's like very forgiving in some ways, especially if you have Ochette in your party, so she can basically hit every weakness in the game. It's a really forgiving game in terms of just like letting you do what you want to do.
I heard it gets kind of serious toward the end, though.
Oh yeah, but then you just power level. That's okay. Fine.
That's all good. And you can get the ship whenever you want?
As long as you have, 100,000 leaves or something.
Once you
like
get Particio, you have 100,000 leaves. I think the game intends for you to get it near the end, but I bought it at, like, 10,000.
Same.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I got out into the sea, and I was like, level 37? Like, this is recommended for level 35 and above. It's like, hey, I'm like, level 12. Let's go.
Level 16 party members setting out for their first expedition.
Per usual, I don't have a lot of time to actually play video games, but I will keep this one in my back pocket.
It's a very good game for bite size. Like, I find the dungeons and stuff are all just so snappy. You're in, you're out. They use clever illusions with the terrain to, like, make you hunt for treasure chests and whatnot. But you don't have to if you don't want to. You can
torches always light the critical path in the dungeon. means. So good to know. They literally tell you, like, hey, go this way if you want other stuff, or go this way if you want to go in the critical path.
Okay, that's what we've been playing. And now it's time for a series of random encounters. Microsoft's takeover of Activision Blizzard will not result in substantial lessening of competition, according to the CMA, which makes it, it seems to pave the way a lot. It takes a big barrier down from Microsoft's acquisition. Honkai Star Rail is out April 26th on PC and mobile, with the PlayStation release to come later. How is that Genshin Impact playing through going, Eric?
Oh, I'm done, but I might check out Honkai just because I've heard it's an RPG and I'm kind of curious. So we'll see. I'll pick it up for a week and then drop it, just like I did with Genshin.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles The Last Ronin is getting a game that's very similar to God of War. Are you familiar with the concept of Last Ronin?
No. Did you say Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Is that what I just heard?
Last Ronin is the end of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and the idea is that all of the other brothers are dead, and so is Splinter, and Michelangelo's the only one left.
Oh, that one. Okay. There was actually a subplot like that in the Nickelodeon Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, where he was stuck in Dimension X and he had to kind of become a survivor while everyone else.
He's become a true ninja. He's like very grim dark.
I remember it now. I'm trying to remember where I saw it. Was there an animated version of that?
No, I think it was just a comic.
It might have been the comic I read then. Yeah okay.
That was always the final chapter, which I have to say is a very grim final chapter
kind
for
of
the
is.
Boys.
Especially Michelangelo, of all the ones, you destroy his joy. Why don't you? Like every.
Well, that's what makes him a good candidate.
Yeah,
exactly. It's like, oh, that's kind of mean, though.
It's the best one. Elden Ring 1.09 is out. In addition to balance changes, it's adding ray tracing. Fire Emblem Engage is getting its final wave of DLC on April 4th. And this one is a side story set in an alternate world where various characters are kind of the opposite. So you're playing
cool
with, like, the villains. You're fighting against people that are normally your allies. It adds two new classes in the Enchanters and the Merge Cannons. I'm kind of interested in playing it, except that I really want to play other games at a certain point, so
I'm
just going to
play
it
just because I feel like Engage, like, I don't know if this is what it's going to do, but Engage's story, it didn't really have a good villain. And the problem with that is it had characters who were actually really good characters.
You don't like Giant Snake Guy?
His design is cool. I have to say he's one of the coolest looking dragons.
They're all right as villains.
That's the thing. Like, they're good characters over, like, I'm not talking about them. They're cool. But my problem is that they're all like, oh, we worship the fell dragon. Okay, why? He seems like an asshole. You all seem like pretty cool people.
I think they talk about it a little bit.
Not enough.
Like, well, one of them is just a psychopath.
Yeah, but he has like 20,000 kids and they're all dead. I don't know. It's really
one,
weird.
They lay out the motivations. I'm not going to get into spoiler territory.
But okay. Tell me this much, at least. There's a character, I won't say which one, who is the a child of the fell dragon, and they ask their mother, or they say basically, my mom said you're a good person, or you still, like, you know, she loved you. That's what she said. She loved you. And the fell dragon's like, duh, the fell dragon. So is there a reason why they explain why these people follow the fell dragon, why they worship him, and they're good people at the same time? They explain why would they
this is like the whole plot, Nadia.
Nadia, you're asking for the plot of the video game.
You're asking for
but
the
I've
plot.
Played like very far into the game and I haven't really found any answers. I was wondering
how far are you?
I was like close to the end. I am at the battle with like Lord Sombron. Is that his name?
Okay.
Or am I thinking
I'm like on chapter 22 and they lay it all out.
You're coming into a good chapter. If it's one, it's like chapter 24.
Farther and knows the answer to this question.
No, I'm just saying that the villain's motivations could have been explained better. And
maybe
we'll get that. If we get that with the DLC,
well,
I'm good.
The fell dragon's motivation is, I just want everybody to die.
But then why would people love him at all? Like, I understand there is, of course, Stockholm Syndrome and all that stuff, but something just seems weird about it. I feel like there's a missing... It doesn't have to be something big.
You see, Master Wayne, some people just want to watch the world burn.
I just want a little bit of connective tissue, that's all.
Like, I will tell you after the show, I don't want to spoil anything for people who might actually care about Fire Emblem Engage's
It has a good story. I like the story.
The story's
I like the characters.
Fine.
We'll get Michael Caine in here to explain the plot to you.
Morbius is out in Marvel's Midnight Suns.
It's Morbid Time. Let's go.
Let's put it back in theaters and bomb again.
THQ Nordic is teasing a re-release of Gothic for Nintendo Switch. And finally, today is the day, as of the release of this podcast, the Wii U and 3DS eShop is closing. Rest in peace.
I can't do taps because I ruined my voice at karaoke yesterday.
I hope you listened to last week's episode where we told you which ones to get. And by the way, yes, a lot of people were mentioning Bravely Default, the original Bravely Default.
I really screwed up. I'm really sorry. I thought for some reason that was on the DS, not the 3DS.
It's a 3DS.
Okay.
I don't like the game.
Well, you just suck.
I don't enjoy that game.
It deserved a mention, for sure. So I'm sorry about that.
Is it because of all the grinding? Is it because the story is like Final Fantasy III?
It's for a lot of reasons. I bounced heavy off that game.
I did too, which is why I was surprised how much I liked Bravely Default 2.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
Octopath 2. Crimson Shroud. Buy Crimson Shroud on your 3DS.
And now it's letter time.
It's letter time.
As always, we went into the Discord, our community, which you can join for just $1 on patreon.com/buggodpod.
Uh-huh.
And asked, hey, send us your questions. We're going to hang out. We're going to vibe and answer some questions. So we'll start with Criminal Justice, who's actually here. We're going to meet Criminal Justice at the meetup, I think. But they ask, are golden routes good? Does a golden route make a game better, or should you be forced to live with your choices knowing there is no optimal path?
This is a tricky thing because I had an argument recently about whether a golden path and a true path are the same thing, because I say they're not. They're two different things.
Yeah.
I think a golden path in the context of like, oh, here's this thing where just this once, nobody has to die and all that. I think it's fine. I like it better when it's locked behind a New Game Plus, so it feels like a reward kind of for the player for wanting to engage more with the game. I don't know that I like it as... look, I've said it before, I like Mass Effect a lot. I think one of the weirdest things about Mass Effect is the way people engage with it, and that like they want perfect runs every time, and so they do the same thing every single time. Whereas I think a lot of players then don't get to experience...
growth.
Well, and a lot of like the good writing that happens when you kill a character or something. Like,
I think I told you that when I was playing my Shepherd as a Renegade to start.
You shot Rex, right?
I did not.
Oh, okay.
Don't shoot Rex.
But I was just kind of trying to roleplay a little bit. Yeah. I definitely let the Arachni Queen die.
Among
other things. But then I changed kind of over in Mass Effect 2, and I rationalized it in my head as my character realizing that actually they didn't want to be a human supremacist, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and that they grew as a character, and that really enhanced my role-playing experience as a result.
I think the game that did it best was Undertale. And that's because you have your neutral route, which is probably the first one you're going to do. And there are actually a million ways to finish the neutral route in Undertale. Some of them are very good, like, hey, we're going to miss you, kid. You know, thanks for visiting. Some of them are really scary. Like, if you just, you can slaughter everyone and leave just, like, a couple of people alive and really get some dark endings. Like, you can get Sans to hunt you, which would be really terrifying. But once you're done with the neutral route, then you have the incentive to do the pacifist route. Which, of course, is the true ending. It's the golden ending. Everyone's happy. Yay. But you do not get the full story of that game until you do the genocide route. So you have to do everything to put everything together so that you find out who is Flowey, why is he like this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just a way to completely complete the game. And especially with genocide route in Undertale, that's where you get the super boss fights. And they're, like, of course, legendary. So for my money, Undertale does it best. And I would love to see more games kind of really intertwine their narrative that way. So you don't feel like a complete dick for doing, you know, bad things, but you don't, you know, you kind of have an incentive to to find that last bit of story, because you have basically you have to make bad choices to get the full story, and that's difficult, but I think it's pretty important.
Mm-hmm. I think what Justice was kind of asking is, should there be a path in which everybody's happy, it's all great, or should there be multiple paths, but all of them kind of have their drawbacks? And I'm leaning toward the second one, because as Eric was kind of saying, yeah, if you're doing one where it's the quote unquote good ending and everybody's happy and everything, well, everybody's just going to play for that one,
yeah,
for the most,
yeah,
part. And
yeah,
I count myself among them. It's like, well, of course, same. Why would I want my characters to be sad? They're my friends.
Yeah, no.
I actually think The Witcher 3 is a good example of this. Because The Witcher 3, I don't remember what the like bad ending is, quote unquote. But there are two different endings you can have. And you jump ahead a little bit if you don't want to hear Witcher 3 spoilers for whatever reason. But you can either have Ciri leave and go take up the royal throne of...
Become the Empress.
Yeah, become the Empress. Or you can keep Ciri with you and she becomes a Witcher in training, basically. And this might be a bold take. I think that's like The Last of Us Part 1 almost, but like a little bit more interesting, because number one, you're not like hinging it on this weird dramatic device where like, well, it's Joel, you have to be selfish or unselfish and the world hangs in the balance. But like this one is just, are you as Geralt, how have you bonded with Ciri? And I actually, in my game, she left and became Empress. And I know some people consider that like, oh, her staying with you is good because Geralt and Ciri are together now. And I want Ciri to be her own person. I mm-hmm. want Ciri to go do things that Ciri wants to do. And I see the Witcher in training ending as kind of like, oh, we're just going back to the safety of what we've always known. And I think it's compelling when you have decisions like that and you don't just have a, well, did you get enough points on the war board to not have everyone die to the Reavers?
It seemed like a horrible life to just spend it hunting monsters. I understand that it was a level of freedom to it, but everybody kept talking about how bad it was to be a Witcher.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Geralt seemed miserable.
Geralt's like the last Witcher. They spend the whole time talking about how Witchers are like a dying breed and monster hunters aren't as needed as they used to be, etc., etc. So like, it feels really weird to then be like, hey, Ciri, come join me in this terrible profession I'm in.
It's a really bittersweet finale as well. It's really good.
Yeah.
I think.
I love Witcher. It's so good.
If you haven't played it, go play it. Witcher 3 spoilers off. Okay. JCX asks, which non-RPG series would you create an RPG entry for? And which developer would you want to make it?
I would take another crack at a Mega Man X RPG, and I would give it to Capcom, because I think they had something good going with, what was it called, Command Mission. I was looking at a Let's Play of it recently, and I realized this is basically Final Fantasy X's battle system with, you know, some cool robot elements. You're fighting Mega Man X characters and enemies and monsters that are very familiar. It was actually fun to walk around and talk to other Reploids and, you know, all that stuff. It had the good basis there. It just didn't come together perfectly at the end. The environments weren't great. Some of the boss fights were very good. And it needed some more polish, maybe needed another year. I think they could probably have something really cool going on.
Who'd you want to make it?
Oh, I said Capcom, because I don't remember what sub-team did it. It was the Breath of Fire 5 team, actually. Dragon Quarter team. So, yeah. By all means, I should get another crack at whatever.
I think I would want someone to make a Hunter x Hunter RPG, because I think Hunter x Hunter would be a fantastic setting for an RPG. You've got all these characters that are very recognizable, very likable, have their own. If you're not familiar with Hunter x Hunter, everyone in that world exists on this spectrum of power, and so you can be in certain quadrants. So like, the main character is kind of in the power fighter, where a lot of his moves are direct offense, but then another character is a specialist. So he's really good, but in very specific circumstances that he has to like set up and be prepared for. So I think that lends itself well to an RPG. Mm-hmm. Also just has amazing art, amazing characters. And I would say Bandai Namco. I heard mixed things about One Piece Odyssey. So instead I will say that I would want Ryu Gotoku Studio make it. I would want that Yakuza like a dragon team making a Hunter x Hunter, because I don't just think they get combat right, I think they get the tone right. And that's very important because Hunter x Hunter has a really key mix of the ridiculous and the serious that I think would be really, really crucial. So
I was having a conversation recently about Metroid and why it never seems to sell very well. And one of the things that we were kind of talking about was how it was stuck between a game like Metroid Prime, for example, was stuck between the family-friendly audience that Nintendo cultivates and the FPS audience, that kind of thing. And whereas the traditional Metroidvanias, for whatever reason, just don't seem to resonate a whole lot. I think Metroid Dread was maybe one of the most successful in the series to date. But by and large, Metroid doesn't tend to sell. And so we're like, okay, but how can you get it to a point where it might resonate and maybe a genre change might be the trick? They said, well, Metroid Other M was an interesting step in the right direction, except for the part where it was really bad.
That was the only problem.
Classic blunder.
Yeah. But maybe Metroid could be an RPG. I think the world is relatively compelling. I think that obviously Samus would need to be
It would all come down to the writing because Samus is, her isolation is a big part of who she is. But then, of course, an RPG isn't necessarily all about isolation. Okay. It can be, but...
Okay, hear me out. Metroid by way of From Software.
I would do that. I would play it in 5 seconds.
So it's basically Sekiro
with
more RPG elements. You're controlling Samus. The plot is there, but it's fairly minimal.
Or at least environmental storytelling, basically.
And it's mostly vibes.
Yeah.
And it's a sci-fi setting, that kind of thing. A lot of exploration. And I think that would retain the spirit of Metroid, but put it into a new context.
It's funny you said that because when I was thinking of how do you do a Metroid RPG when Samus has to be like the main character, really potentially the only character, and my mind went to a FromSoft game, but to Kingsfield.
Ooh.
And like a first person Samus RPG that has like a lot of that. I mean, how different are Metroid Prime and Kingsfield at the end of the day? You know, when you think about it, you just got to make numbers and there you go. So
I would also accept a Street Fighter Tactics RPG.
That'd be fun. I'd love that.
Yeah.
Chun-Li spinning kick around her.
Like made by Intelligent Systems.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say like a Midnight Suns type thing. Let Firaxis take a swing at it.
I think you would want to go more strategy than tactics, actually, because you'd want to build up the characters and choose which moves you want to use and everything.
You build a dojo and they can like train different stuff. So it's like the XCOM base building, but you like, put Ryu in his little locker room to train.
Oh, so cute.
I think also a traditional party-based command system Castlevania RPG would be a lot of fun.
That would be fun. I would like that.
Yeah, with like the Castlevania Netflix party. Can I pitch you on something that's not an RPG, but I thought of yesterday and has been bugging me ever since? It's so good. I want the team that made TMNT Shredders and Streets of Rage to make a Spider-Man multiverse beat 'em up.
That'd be fun. I've
been thinking about it ever since I was talking to a friend about it. Just you have Miles and you have Spider-Gwen, you have Spider-Noir, you have Mecha Spider and all that.
It'd be so fun. Yeah. I'm not even that much of a Spider-Man fan, but
I don't think the RPG would work because I think they're all a little too similar of a character to do an RPG.
Webshot.
Yeah, but I think a beat 'em up in a very like classic arcade feel would be good. Anyways, good RPG pitches.
Teeps wants to know, if you were going to make an RPG-themed cocktail, what would the name be and what would be in it?
Wow, Teeps put this in here to judge us all on our ability to mix liquor. This is great.
I don't know the first thing about mixing liquor, so what I would do is just take some rum, mix it with some vodka, put in some orange juice and call it Thou Art Dead. That's the best I can do, I'm sorry. I don't drink that much. I usually have like maybe a beer or a, I love Moscow mules, because they're really easy on my stomach, but otherwise I don't drink.
Yeah.
Parish. This is a parish question.
Yeah, a parish. We did seasonal drinks
a long, long time ago.
That was fun. And then Parrish, I think, actually made them and photographed them and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd just do like, I don't know, a margarita, but you put like something kind of, I don't know, minty maybe in it. and like color it blue with like Curacao or something and call it like the Shiva. But like, that's, there are probably people at home who are mixologists who are going like, oh my God, look, this is the Shiva. All right. You take one part blue Powerade and one part vodka.
And then she snaps and you turn gay.
Yeah. I mean, you can make a variant on a Dark and Stormy or something and call it like the Bahamut.
That's cool.
So I'll call it Adol's boat. Stormy.
I personally like a good old fashioned, especially one that's very cinnamony, I suppose you could say, or like has maple in it. Maybe like a bourbon old fashioned with like maple. And can we think of a name like around that?
Oh,
around maple? I was going to say around cinnamon, you could call it like Ifrit or something like that.
Oh.
But maple?
Maple, you think like, well, Canadian, but I don't know a lot of Canadian RPG characters.
No, I was thinking like sweet, because that's what I think of when I hear maple. So I think,
I think of fall. I think of autumn when I hear maple. Yeah. Which is funny, because it's usually, well, I'll tell you what, March, it's in Canada, you can't get away from maple shit. It's all over the shelves.
Sure.
I name it after, like, who's the witch in Tales from Berseria? Magilu. I call it like Magilu's old fashioned or something like that.
That's kind of nice. Like it is something you associate with like a witch and the forest.
I was thinking Tales of Arise for some reason.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's a very seasonal RPG in some ways.
I don't think Rinwall's allowed to drink either. I think Rinwall's too young.
Give it to Hoodle.
Yeah, Hoodle's allowed to drink.
Hoodle's powerbomb.
It's your old pal Victor from the Editing Bay. I'd like to offer up an option for the name for this old-fashioned, the Racuna Sheldon, named after a character from Etrian Odyssey, literally from Ontario. Okay, keep having fun, you crazy kids.
Ruka wants to know, apparently they asked us, they asked an AI to generate a question for us.
Oh dear.
Who is your favorite non-humanoid party member and why? I.e. Rapide, Red 13, Siegfried, Morn, Urshan, etc. For me, it's the dog from Persona 3.
Koromaru?
Something like that? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Koromaru. I love any game that has a pet.
Yeah.
As a party member. The second that I can have a pet as a party member, they go into the party and they do not come out.
I think I'm going to vote for my FF14 Chocobo Jollibee, because basically I got him up to level 20 and I gave him the Rubicante barding. So he looks badass. I gave him red feathers as well. And he's a beast. Like, he's actually like in FF14, you're fighting alone a lot of time, but you can summon your Chocobo to help you so he can kick. He's basically a fully qualified attacker, defender, and healer. So yeah, he's as good as any party member. So I'm going with him because he kicks shit.
Shoutouts to the Mabari Warhound from Dragon Age Origins.
Oh, they're cool.
Even if nobody else got me, I know my dog got me. So,
Does the robot from Fallout 4 count?
No, it's a robot. That's not a pet.
He's a synth. It's a non-humanoid party member.
Oh, if we can count robots, I mean, Aegis from Persona 3 is pretty high up there. I like Aegis a lot. I do like Nick Valentine from Fallout 4.
That was it. Yeah, Nick Valentine. He's great.
Yeah, he's good. HK-72 from Knights of the Old Republic?
Yes,
HK-47.
You have to love HK. I judge Star Wars by how they do their droids.
Yeah, yeah.
And BioWare was the original, like, let's make a droid that just insults you all the time. And other games have tried to do that, but have failed. Like, I think the writing.
Trap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I don't care for Borderlands particularly.
No. Not my style of humor, really.
No, not. I don't.
No.
I think that's a good description. Not my style of humor. Milk wants to know, we have a single use item to revive only one dead RPG series. Which series are we reviving?
Oh.
And my answer is Ultima.
Ah.
I think that it's a crime that Ultima was allowed to die. I think that obviously it has a rich lineage. So much of what we know about RPGs today got their start with Ultima, I think that the quest, the avatar elements,
yes, for sure,
can really work well in a modern context. I think I would really love to see an updated version of Ultima 4. Is basically what it kind of comes down to, and I think it would do really well in the modern era. But it's just sitting in a vault somewhere at EA, like along with a lot of other wonderful series like Wing Commander and whatnot. So I would say if I could use one revive, it would be for Ultima.
I'm going to take the easy way out and say Breath of Fire, just because, sorry, it's such a, it's not always perfect battle-wise, systems-wise, but it's such a charming world, it's such charming characters. Capcom does really great character designs, and they're so well-suited for RPGs, like cat people, dog people. It's so simple, but so compelling. So yeah, I just want to bring back, like you were talking earlier about, like, you know, more colorful RPGs. That's one of the most colorful RPG series in existence. Well, 5 wasn't, but yeah, I would bring it back.
Yeah, Nadia took mine, so I'm just looking at the list right now. But honestly, I'm going to just go with my heart and say I want another Shin Megami Tensei Devil Survivor. I know it hasn't been that long since we had
Shin Megami Tensei is still going.
Yeah, but Devil Survivor.
Devil Survivor is a series.
Yeah. You could put any other RPG.
It could still happen.
Yeah, you could be like, hey, we'll make a new Chrono game or we'll make Devil Survivor 3. And I'll be like, sorry, Chrono fans.
What about Final Fantasy Tactics?
I would like a new Final Fantasy Tactics. The thing is, I think a lot of people are doing their own versions of Final Fantasy Tactics these days. Whereas I don't see anyone trying to do what Devil Survivor does. So that's maybe like the key difference for me. I would also like to see more stuff like Front Mission and all that.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
But sometimes you can wish for a thing to come back, but then it's a monkey paw situation, as we learned with Valkyrie Elysium last year. As soon as I saw that announcement, I was like, and I tried to be positive. I did.
I would have said, like, Suikoden would have been this pick for me, but then, like, Aiden is coming out, so we're already kind of getting that.
Yeah, and we're getting a really handsome HD remaster of it as well. Yeah.
So somebody's out there already using their little potions.
Pash wants to know, everybody loves to debate what it is or is not an RPG. Usually has something to do with something should be in the pantheon or not. What edge case, probably not an RPG, would you put into the pantheon if you had to put one in? And Pash, I'm glad you asked that, because I'm going to announce right here and right now that the pantheon vote for this month is for a Legend of Zelda game.
Oh, yeah. Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Shit, Zelda's closer than I thought it was.
Sure is. So,
oh, gracious me.
Is Zelda an RPG?
Yeah.
No. But... Do I want to play it for a month and then judge it based on its relationship to RPGs and its connections to the RPG genre?
Yes.
And also just generally do a Zelda game? Yeah. If this is a Hall of Fame, I think Zelda deserves at least a passing mention, especially Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Though it's not a given that that's the one that we'll be playing. So please look forward to the vote this week. Which Legend of Zelda are we going to be playing?
This is going to be murder. It's going to be murder.
It's going to be great.
Oh, and if y'all don't pick a Link Between Worlds, we can't be friends anymore.
Oh, interesting. Well, let's see. I think Link to the Past is a given.
Yeah.
Breath of the Wild is a given.
Yeah.
Well, what are the other two?
Link Between Worlds.
Majora's Mask?
Yeah, I'd say Majora's Mask and one of the other 2D Zeldas, like Between Worlds.
Wind Waker?
Awakening. Oh, Wind Waker might not.
Oh,
Wind Waker's hard to get these days.
I'd choose the Chaotic Path and say Spirit Tracks. I love that stupid game
Four
so much.
Swords Adventure.
I liked that when I played it. Like, I was so desperate for Zelda, though, so I would play anything at that point.
Robo Riley wants to know, what about making this podcast brings you joy that you didn't expect when you started and or joined
Nothing
the show?
Nothing and flip the table.
Boom. Well, screw this show.
Screw this show.
I think
last episode.
I never expected to have such a great community.
Mm-hmm.
The Discord, definitely the Discord is what unexpectedly brought me a ton of joy. Just being able to, okay, when I was growing up, I hung out mostly in forums and IRC channels and that kind of thing. That was how I made a lot of my friends. I was a very lonely child.
Aww.
And So that became a very natural way of interacting for me. And so I find it incredibly rewarding to have our own community that I get to hang out in and talk with all the time. And I recognize all of them. And some of them are going to be at this panel. It's great. Yeah. So that's the thing that I think unexpectedly brought me a lot of joy.
I think unexpectedly for me, it was like, I've always been a writer and I've always had people reading my writing and saying, hey, this is funny. This is good. I never expected anyone to want to hear me talk. Like, I never thought like people would want to tune in for my, like, whatever the hell it is I do. And that surprised me because I was always very introverted and shy, especially when I was like in my, you know, preteens and teens. So if you told me when I was that age, like, hey, you're going to be on a panel in front of a whole bunch of people and like speaking, I probably would have shit myself. I just wouldn't have, I wouldn't have managed. But when I started doing it, it was like, oh, okay, I guess maybe I'm okay at this. So that it was cool to discover even this late in my life that I still can do things that I had no idea I could do.
You're better than okay, Nadia. You're like the heart and soul of this podcast.
Aw, see, that's
we
also...
We need a segment after you.
Yeah.
It's also intimidating when you think about it, though, because like when you have an audience, people listen to what you say, and that's a lot of power. That's a lot of privilege.
You have power.
You do, though. When you think about like how cults and stuff start, it's like, let's say I got up there and said, I don't know, some stupid thing like, oh, the earth is actually shaped like a cube. Most people are going to go, you're an idiot, and you're going to walk away. You're always going to have that small faction that's going to be like, yeah, you're right. The earth is a cube. And that's how problems become problems. And so that's why you, when you have an audience and you speak to them and they listen, that's a lot of power. That's, you have to be responsible.
I like that this question, which is very wholesome, became a secret pit.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's a good point.
We could wield our power for evil. You're right.
Hello, everybody. We're starting a new segment on Acts of the Blood God. We're calling it Cult of the Blood God.
Finally.
But I don't want to be a cult.
You need to sell all of your belongings. And
that's the opposite of what I want. I don't want people to, I don't want to control people. I just, you know, I think it's nice that they listen to me, but dear God, there's so
but
much damage you
can
do.
New Patreon tier.
Oh, good, finally. The devotees. Yeah, I'll just say I think this is provided alongside, I echo both of what y'all have said, and also it's given me like a really good forum to just have really interesting critical discussions about games and really explore not just why I like RPGs, but what I like about RPGs, how that differs from other people, and appreciating how many different ways you can come at this genre. We've had so many excellent people on the show. We've had excellent, even Blood God folks like Vivi who have come on the show and been absolutely incredible.
Yeah,
so like,
sure.
Shout out to Vivi.
Yeah, like it's been really cool and really like just really fun to see this show grow. And I'll just also say that every time somebody out in the wild is like, oh, that's the Blood God, I listened to that, it just warms my heart.
I've learned a lot about RPGs in the 400, actually probably closer to 500 episodes we've done, because I'm not counting the Patreon ones. I've learned a lot about RPGs and the history of RPGs and all the important RPGs. And that was one of the reasons that I returned to the beginning with episode 400. And Felipe was an amazing guest.
That was a fun...
I felt like I was learning a ton just having him on the show.
Exactly.
So
I think we've learned a lot about, like, when we started the show, I don't think you and I knew a whole lot about PCRPGs back in, like, 70s, 80s. Like, that was a big thing for us to learn. So I keep learning every day, and that's really cool.
Also, the pits that the Stars of Destiny chat become. And if you want to join, patreon.com. Okay. Thanks, everybody, for sending in questions. We'll do another one of these. We're running out of time. So let's move on to the Pantheon of the Blood God revisit right after these messages. It's time now for the Pantheon of the Blood God revisit, the segment in which we revisit a game that went into the Pantheon or didn't and decide whether or not we made the right or wrong choice. It's all in the lead up to a special that we're going to be doing relatively soon, I think in April. And this week's is Final Fantasy X.
You waited until we were in person to do this.
And... well, Eric did this one on his own. I wasn't on this
Nadia
one.
Nadia was there.
I was there.
Eric and Nadia just did this one on their own. And Final Fantasy X did go into the Pantheon.
Unanimously, might I add.
So in hindsight, does it deserve its lofty status?
Gosh darn right it does. That RPG is so good. It's really very good. And I've replayed it multiple times. And every time I find new ways in which I appreciate how good that game is, how well they bring Final Fantasy concepts forward while still creating something new. I think it is the best Final Fantasy we've had post PlayStation 1. I feel like that is very easy to say.
Better than 12?
Yes.
You're out of here.
Better than 10-2?
Yeah.
I mean, you have to have 10 in order to have 10-2. Thinking about it, I think 10 is better than 13, certainly. Sorry, 13 stands. Better than 15. I don't really count 14 because it's like its own thing.
11 and 14 are kind of weird to count.
This is goodbye.
12. I'd rather play 10 than 12. I'll say that much.
Yeah.
I like 12 a lot. I think it's kind of underrated in a lot of ways. Is it historically significant?
Yeah.
I think the battle system really adds a lot to RPGs. I'll just say, I can't even remember that episode very well. I just remember saying, I will repeat this. Seymour sounds like the Green Moon Knight when he talks. And it drives me crazy. Oh, yeah, it's just, you know, I live on the moon.
I mean, historical significance, this was the first time Final Fantasy had voiceover.
That's true.
PS2 FMV cutscenes. And like, everyone remembers those cutscenes of Yuna dancing on the water. I just want Yuna to stop dancing. And all this, like it was just such a big production that I think even today is still impressive. Like, it's still amazing to go look at what they made. And I think the incredible part is that they made a beautiful world that still looks great. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a rarity for that era. Like, PS2 games don't always age super well.
There was an interesting controversy. Apparently it's been 10 years since the original remaster for Vita and PS3, which subsequently come out on like PS4. People were pointing out that the way that they changed the art style made the character portrait, the models look too soft or something like that. It was a little weird.
Yeah, they definitely look different than their PS2 versions. I noticed that when I played it again for the PS4, and that is what it is. You want to talk about how remasters end up getting rid of really interesting moody lighting concepts that only existed because of limitations. That's another episode entirely. But
I agree. I think it does hold up. The question to me is, what is the special something about Final Fantasy X?
I mean, it would be really easy to just say the music, because I think it has like a top 5 RPG soundtrack all time. I also just think it's the story. It really is the story. I think that Romeo and Juliet-esque love story is the best version of that Square has done. And I think it works really well. I think the world is absolutely incredibly designed. I think the Spira that they created is so good that they made another game set in it. And they did nothing after that. Nothing came afterwards.
Eric, did you know that Spira is a spiral of death?
Yeah, it's a spiral of death, and I will lead it there.
Why is Tidus the worst Final Fantasy protagonist?
Oh, he sucks, but he's supposed to say, this is the Shinji Ikari argument. This is like, it's okay for people to be flawed and
he doesn't have to be in the game.
Look, could you argue that that game could just be Yuna and the Guardians and it would still work? Kind of, but also, like, I think it highlights some of the subtler points of Yuna's story in interesting ways. And I still like Tidus and Jecht overall, even if I do think that's maybe like one of the flimsier, like it's the more overt one, but it's flimsy when held up to scrutiny. Whereas Yuna's is not as overt, but is very good when you like dig into it. So
it's very linear. Kind of got rid of the...
Intentionally so.
They got rid of the overworld conceit, which was disappointing. But Eric, you didn't say the real reason, the real special something of Final Fantasy X, which is obviously Blitzball.
Let's go. God.
Which is 3D water soccer. They just put Captain Tsubasa in an RPG. And you know what? I didn't really know that I loved sports RPGs until I played Final Fantasy X. and then just got completely lost in that game.
I played Blitzball once when I had to, and I was like, I'm good.
Did you jack shot and murder?
No, I actually think I forgot to pick up the jack shot, and that was my problem. Oh, I
love the jack shot. The jack shot is so OP. Even
and then, but everyone just cheats and goes hides behind the net once they do the jack shot and wait for the game to end.
I just love the concept of Titus learns a new like underwater soccer move by fighting the intrusive thoughts of his father's insults. Like it's like that game is so just it's goofy in a way that I feel like too many RPGs almost take themselves too seriously nowadays. Yeah. They all want to be like Game of Thrones and they want to be like real serious.
You mean like Final Fantasy 16?
Yeah. Like look, I think 16 looks good, but I am also like, I think this game takes itself too seriously. Like 10 does some wild shit. You want to ride this shoe puff and all that? Like
ride the shoe puff?
Yeah, it's a wild, like fun in like whimsical game. Like there's whimsy in RPGs that I think some games are trying to get past. I don't like that.
There's an interesting point to, like so many people dislike Blitzball or bounced off it because you probably had a really horrible experience the first time you played it. And I think that makes people just not want to engage with it at all, as opposed to having a good experience and that kind of thing.
Yeah. But
I think this is what I'll say about Final Fantasy X. I think it was the last truly great classical vision of what a Final Fantasy is.
Yeah.
And certainly I think the world building has a lot to do with it because Final Fantasy has a real problem with having a cohesive setting.
Yeah, it really does.
And it's gotten progressively worse. And I think from an art design standpoint, a lore standpoint and everything, Spira was really interesting. And I enjoyed being in that world. It felt like Final Fantasy.
Mm.
And I mean, I love the Albed conceit where you're slowly learning the language and everything.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
It was cool. I also like that Final Fantasies used to feel big.
Yes.
And Final Fantasy X still felt, even though it was linear, still felt huge.
Those skyboxes and stuff that they did are absolutely gorgeous. They're so wonderful and really like give you a sense of place even when you're in a small screen.
The international edition where they added the Dark Aeons. I think that was like that solidified it in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So.
And that upgrade system, the sphere system, really shines in that international version where you have to like really engage with how the sphere grid works. It's a really cool system.
I think the sphere is pretty cool.
I think we could talk about this for quite a while. I could almost feel like we could do another Pantheon episode of Final Fantasy X, but
I'll play it again.
I think there's a lot of conversations to still be had.
Mm-hmm.
Go check out our Pantheon of the Blood God episode for Final Fantasy X. That's available through our Patreon, and please look forward to our Pantheon of the Blood God revisit. Nadia, take us home.
Do you remember this is actually came out very, very recently, but it's still tied in nostalgia, I swear to God. I think all of us learned what an ocarina is through Zelda games, basically.
Yeah,
Zelda 3,
yeah.
Ocarina of Time. So ever since Ocarina of Time became a huge thing, there's been this company called Songbird Ocarinas, and they've always, like, they've been around forever. You've probably seen their ads in, like, you know, magazines, even the internet. So they actually have a booth here at PAX. Mm. And I'm like, oh, I've always kind of wanted an ocarina, but I never really went out and bought one. And here they are. Maybe it's fate. So the woman who sold it to me was very nice. She's like kind of like playing the song, like, you know, Epona song, doo-doo-doo, and, you know, Zelda's lullaby, doo-doo-doo. And she's making it sound so soft and beautiful and gentle. I'm like, oh, I could do that. You know, it'd be nice for me to take up an instrument that doesn't sound like, because I used to play the clarinet. I wouldn't mind getting back to it, but I had neighbors. So I bought it. Take it back to my hotel room. I've blown into it once. It sounds like a dying cat mating with seven other cats. And I'm like, oh, Jesus, what have I done? And
like
I still...
Seven other cats?
Not Nadia's next door hotel neighbors, like hearing all these screeches suddenly erupt in the middle of the night.
So... So I'm like, oh, God. Now, my apartment has concrete walls, but I don't know if that's going to be good enough. I'm still going to give it a try. I've never seen my neighbor. This is really weird. Like, I know most of the people on my floor, but my neighbor is like a shadow. They come in and out. They flit in and out. And I'm just like, I don't want to piss them off, whoever they are. If they don't talk, if I don't see them, it means they're probably easy to piss off. So yeah, I'm still gonna give it a good try. And if I fail, well, you know, it still looks really nice. I'll put it on my special shelf. My Graha figure is there.
The Always Sunny text with Nadia buys an ocarina.
That's how they always get you. You're like, whoa, wow, well, it'd be fun to play the ocarina. And then it ends up sitting on your shelf. Like, my ocarina is sat on my shelf for X number of years.
I want to learn an instrument. Maybe I'll learn how to sing. I don't know. I still like to just play musical. I'll get around to it someday.
I can play the recorder.
No one can play the recorder. I actually just saw the Bluey episode where Bluey's playing a recorder while her mom's trying to, like, get a bunch of stuff done. And it's just like topping off this terrible scene where her kids are nagging her and the recorder's going, like, do you remember that South Park episode where everyone had a recorder and they played the brown note? That was a great episode.
Oh, I think you'll say they all played Hot Cross Buns because that's the one that everybody learns how to play on a recorder.
Recorders are like one of the biggest grifts you'll ever have in an elementary school.
They really
convince you to buy one of those things and carry it around with you for some reason.
Oh, and in the little baggie and everything.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we just shared them. We disinfected them, but we just shared them.
Speaking of singing, we all did karaoke last night. It was a packed house. Had a great time. Ken and Eric singing In the End. Very strong.
Ken always, look, it's the Normandy FM brand. We apparently just do Linkin Park songs, and Ken sings and I rap, and that's how it goes.
Did you know that the Linkin Park folks are huge Gundam fans?
Really?
Yes.
That is so funny.
One of their videos was like super mech heavy.
Oh, cool.
They did a Gundam Versus theme song. Like, they actually did a song for one of the Gundam Versus.
You know the Red Hot Chili Peppers are big fans of Death Note.
Really?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Which is why the movie has Danny California as a theme song.
We sang Californication.
We sang so many California songs.
Wait, we got confused.
Friend of the show, Alex Van Aken, cannot remember which California song he wanted to sing, and we had like three different California songs to
We sing Hotel California, Californication.
California Dreamin'.
California
Dreamin'. So I walk up to him at like the end of the night, and I'm like, he's just laughing, and I'm like, what? He's like, I remembered the song. It was California, rest in peace.
Oh, California. Like, that's Danny California. Like, damn it.
If you came and talked to me, I would have told you.
I could have told you
Danny
that.
Danny California.
That's a great song. It's one of my favorites by them.
That karaoke place, by the way, I'm just going to put them on blast here. I tried to put in Ocean Avenue by Yellow Card, and they did not have Ocean Avenue.
They don't have a lot of songs that were like kind of missing a lot of
songs.
They
have a lot of Blink, but they didn't have Feeling This, which is the one I wanted. That's, you know, like, I like the other ones too, but no one's going to sing Adam's song at karaoke. Well, you just want to be depressed.
I looked for Famous Last Words. They had it last year. They didn't have it this year. I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
They did have Life Will Change, though.
We did have Life Will Change.
And we did sing it.
That's a hard song to sing. That was way too high for me.
Yeah.
There were a lot of songs last night that I did not realize were so high. Natasha Bedingfield, I'm looking at you.
Nadia and I also sang To the Moon and
to
Back.
To the Moon and Back, yeah. And
Little Savage Garden.
Oh, yeah. The Want You, Want Me, whatever, the Savage Garden one.
JoJo one. Yeah.
It was really funny because there were multiple people in the room who had not heard that song, but by like the second chorus, they were really into it.
It's a great song.
It was very fun.
Ooh, I want you, I don't know.
That was a lot of fun. The best karaoke is like when the performance and the song are so strong that even though nobody knows them, you just want to sing along.
Yeah. No, I always try to choose those kinds of songs karaoke. I think I choose some good ones.
I enjoyed singing Down.
Baby, are you down,
down, down, down, down, down. And that's the end of this week's episode of Acts of the Blood God. Thank you so much for listening. I have been your host, Kat Bailey, and it was delightful to sit in this hotel room.
It's a nice room.
Yeah, talking Eric and Nadia on the bed. It feels like we were just chilling out and vibing. I hope you had that feeling too. We're heading to our panel very soon. No, so
like right now.
Yeah, we probably get going.
Yeah, we got to get going. We're going to record that one or try to record that one. I think Eric has a backup plan for that. And we are going to post that one soon. But in the meantime, if you enjoy the show, please leave us a review on the podcatcher of your choice. You can follow me on Twitter at the_capot. Nadia's at Nadia Oxford, and Eric is at CMOOSI. If you want to support the podcast, patreon.com/bloodgodpod, where you can get an ad-free version of this podcast for just $1 a month, and also join the Discord. We also have a merch store, shop.bloodgodpod.com. I managed to change the URL, so it's a lot easier to do.
Yay.
So that's shop.bloodgodpod.com, where we have shirts, mugs, and other cool stuff, and I'll be updating the shop periodically. We'll be back next week, as always, to talk more about the genre that we love. But until then, for Nadia, Eric, and myself, thanks for listening, and happy adventuring.
Game over, man. Game over.